Hey everyone, welcome to The Boundless Show. This is Lisa Anderson. For those of you who are listening to the show right out of the gate, happy or merry Christmas Eve to you all and Christmas weekend. Hopefully you are having a great time of celebrating with family and friends and certainly reflecting on the meaning of Christmas, and more about that in just a moment. But first up, there is about 1 week left to contribute to our Boundless Year-End Giving Campaign, Give a Gift That Grows. This is where you have the opportunity to match dollar for dollar everything that you give to Boundless before December 31st. Hop over to boundless.org/donate. We have got a $25,000 match that we can match up to. So if you're looking for kind of something for year-end giving to finish up your giving for the year, to maybe get a little tax break, Boundless is a great place to do that. So boundless.org/donate. Thank you all for being part of our Boundless family. All right, on to the show. Later on, we have our friend Dr. Carl Benzio here, psychiatrist, to talk about how can you distinguish between spiritual warfare and straight up like clinical depression or other issues. I think a lot of times people muddy the waters in that realm. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to kind of parse it out for us. So it's going to be super helpful. And then for our culture segment, one of our BFFs, Joe Wheeler, he's known as America's Storyteller, is here to read us a Christmas story. So this is where you're going to want to get like some cider. You're going to want to sit down maybe with your family or friends and listen to his story. Just super, super cool. We love him. He's been here before. All right, here we are for this week's roundtable. Very pleased to have Anthony here. Hey, Anthony.
Hey.
We let him back in once in a while for the roundtable. Also, our friends Erica and Cody. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
Great to have you here. So because it is Christmas, we are going to talk about Christmas, but we're not just going to talk about like, hey, did you get all your gifts wrapped and whatever, because probably some of us didn't, so we don't want to break into tears. But... or just figure out all that.
I haven't even gotten a single gift yet, I have to admit.
Awesome. Yeah. So you're just going to do that in the next
I have
couple
yours
hours.
From last year, though, still.
So. Well, I would love to get it from you, so thanks. Yeah, that'll be great. But we're going to talk about just Christmas. Like, you know, most people, if you say the word Christmas, there is something in your experience, in your history, or just something you've learned that makes Christmas especially meaningful for you. And so we want to kind of open it up just to have a little casual convo about that. And I feel like this month, my life has been crazy this month. So I have literally, to this point, I've gone out and looked at some Christmas lights with friends. That is the only thing I have done related to Christmas. And I'm, except for, well, we did have a staff party. So that was good.
And you haven't been like, you know, binging the Hallmark Channel with all the...
No, I have not done anything related to that. I have not done any Christmas cards. I have barely Christmas shopped except for a couple online forays. I have not... I missed our church's Christmas program, some quiet local thing that someone invited me to because I ended up getting just sick or I don't know. It was
you
bad.
You missed my party as well.
I missed Whoa. Anthony's party because I was moving.
That's why you guys good are excuse. Sitting so far
I
away.
Need no, a no, lot no. of reclaim. I need to just reclaim this year's whole celebration. So I need y'all to help me out. So how has it been for you so far, whether you reflect on and compare it to past Christmases or what your visions for the season are? What's been going on?
Well, I'm one of those people that I refuse to celebrate Christmas until Thanksgiving dinner is finished.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I don't listen to Christmas music, even though, like, there's some station in town that plays Christmas music, like, November 1st.
Yeah.
I'm like, calm down, y'all. I'm like, you know, I feel like Thanksgiving always gets the shaft. So, you know, let's appreciate each holiday for what it is. And so as soon as Thanksgiving dinner is over, we usually pick out a Christmas movie that we're going to watch. And, like, some movies are kind of the thing that get me in the...
Oh, okay.
And it's a White Christmas. Uh-huh. We're talking, you know, the Danny Kaye, Bing Crosby. Mm-hmm. That is, like, mm-hmm. the Christmas movie. Movie, and then While You Were Sleeping. Those are my two Christmas movies that kind of get me in the spirit. I've watched those probably every year since I was like 8.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I am the complete opposite of you.
I am
the
okay,
person
Cody.
Who's like, Christmas is not just a holiday, it's a way of life.
Yes.
Christmas every day.
It yeah. is every day.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, we put our tree up, I think, like November 10th.
Wow.
November 10th this year. It was the earliest we've done it. But my daughter's birthday is like right after Christmas. Mm. So like we take it down super quick. So we put it up early so we actually get to see Christmas.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. That's valid. I can respect that.
Yeah. I don't like Thanksgiving. Like I just rather get to Christmas. It's a holiday blocking my Christmas.
Thanks for your honesty there. Okay.
Yeah, that's a pretty dismal view of Thanksgiving. Just a roadblock. Inconvenience on the way to Christmas.
It's that hump.
All right. Well, Anthony, you pride yourself in being a minimalist, so what does the minimalist Christmas look like?
I'm actually not a minimalist when it comes to Christmas. Because I just love to party. So we do tons of parties this entire month. Mm-hmm. I am very, very strict about, like, it shouldn't even be mentioned until after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Like the word Christmas, any one should not even hum a Christmas tune until after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
But after that day, it's no holds bar.
Okay.
So one of my favorite traditions is a buddy and I will go what we call tree hunting, which is simply hiking around in the mountains for a long time until we finally find trees to cut down and bring home.
Okay.
And we always, you know, bring hot chocolate and strap on our gaiters and hike through the snow, hopefully through the snow. This year was great. We also.
Well, what are you going to do when your girls are old enough to know that they're missing out on that?
They'll come with us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, like, so far, it's a dude thing only because my wife hates the cold, and so it's just us.
And you can't strap kids on your back and cut down trees.
Yeah, and like this year, my daughters would have sunk into the snow over their
and
heads.
And been lost.
Yeah,
okay.
I was up to my hips in different parts of the valley. Anyways, so yeah, that's a big part of it. I used to actually install Christmas lights professionally, so I kind of go all out with my house and try to, you know, get all over the roof and have fun with that. And and then like eggnog is a really essential part of this season for me.
Okay.
You can't have too much, but it has to be homemade.
Okay.
And I also am pretty proud to say that I make the best hot chocolate of all time.
Really?
And so that's, I try to bring that to all the parties.
Do you have a son, Buddy the Elf, approved?
Wait. Buddy the Elf is from the film Elf, yeah? Okay. I'm kind of bad at with those things.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. You know, I think, I like to think that he would love it. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Anthony did bring, he brought fudge to our staff party. And
dark chocolate
really
cherry
too.
Fudge, come on.
Yeah. Like, I don't even know, when do you start making that kind of stuff? Because that, I was surprised that you already had that game on.
I basically plan out all my parties for the month and then plan out, like, what drinks and what foods I'm making for them.
Okay. Oh,
wow. You are hardcore,
bro. I'm pretty
hardcore
partier. It's like my spiritual gift.
Yes. Well, I say mine is sleep, so nice. I'll allow it.
Partying is your gift. That's good. Okay, so what else are the essentials of Christmas for you?
For me, I make a pumpkin roll with my mother-in-law every year. Mm. We do about probably 8 logs of pumpkin roll.
Wow.
And we take them to every Christmas party we go to. So we send one to like my husband's work. We send one down to Texas. We, you know, anywhere we go, we take a pumpkin roll with us.
What does this consist of?
Like, so is it like? It's like a pumpkin cake that's really thin, and then you put cream cheese and some sort of nut in it.
Did you bring one right now?
I know. I totally should have. Please roll it up. And it looks so fancy, and it's really easy to make because I can't bake.
It is pretty cool. And then you actually roll it, and you see the cream in the swirl. It's really cool.
It looks like a pinwheel. Like, that's what they look
like. I feel like we should be like hanging out more often after this.
I feel like clearly there are people I need to invite to my parties.
Yes.
I feel like any foods mentioned in this podcast are basically an agreement to bring that food into the office.
Or post the recipe on the blog.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, we haven't talked about music yet. There are some songs or artists that also bring back the childhood memories. Amy Grant's Tennessee Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
What is that grown about?
I mean, I haven't heard this album.
Whether
but it's
you like
Amy
Grant or not, it's like that's like the album from
you
my childhood.
You have heard Amy Grant's first Christmas album. Do not be ridiculous. You probably don't even know you've heard it.
I'm sure that's the case. Yeah. Like walking through a grocery store and playing on the
or walking through church.
Yeah.
Or anyone's home that you know.
So Amy Grant's original Christmas album and then Johnny Mathis. Like those are whenever we would put up the tree as a family, like that's the music we would have in the background. And Amy Grant's rocking around the Christmas tree. Like we would literally rock around the Christmas tree. And there were 5 kids in my family. So, you know, just it was good dance party in the Pretty family household.
See, ours is mine's Evie's Christmas memories. So with Come On, Ring Those Bells and all of the, you know, that's 70s, big time
70s. Yeah, I'm not aware of that. I feel like you need to educate goodness. Me. No, you need to educate
me. I thought you would
me.
Say like to. The Bill Gaither Christmas special or something.
Yeah. It's
he
so true.
Has some classics as well. But I feel like, you know, we didn't, his was more, yeah, not as much Christmas stuff, probably. I have some of his stuff now, but yeah. And then we had some old vinyl too, which I no longer, my sister owns all that, but definitely the memories of like, we had this, it was some random, it was called like the Korean Orphan Choir, which I'm,
nice.
Is that even like PC?
That is so random.
It was just
oh
these goodness. Like Korean orphan children, and they sang all kinds of classics, including The Little Drummer Boy, which I love.
That's so weird because I have a vinyl record just like that, and it's Christmas songs from around the world with children's choirs singing them in all their native languages.
Well, I'm sure the
it's
Korean
sweet.
Orphan choir is on.
Yeah, one of them is Korean. So, oh, okay. Yeah, it could be the same choir.
One of them is Korean.
As far as films go, one of my essentials that's pretty rare is the California Raisins Claymation Christmas special.
Yes!
It's so cool.
Is so dumb.
Oh, no, it's freaking awesome. It's like a series of five different carols that are all done, you know, in claymation. Brilliance and like only one of them is actually the California Raisins, and the host in between each carol are these two claymation dinosaurs that are like the straight man and the funny man, and they go back and forth, and it's so awesome. And like artistically, it's beautiful actually. So.
I had their figurines.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I love.
Well,
them.
if we're talking about niche Christmas movies, I just watched this one. Babes in Toyland, 1986.
Whoa.
Keanu Reeves, Drew Barrymore.
It is so
I've seen
amazing.
That. It's kind of
it's
creepy,
so,
really. But
it's
but
creepy,
cool, yeah.
But endearing. Yeah. And that is like the movie from my childhood. I actually sent a group text message to all my siblings. You guys, look what movie I found. And we were all like celebrating and remembering. And
I need people to not talk about A Christmas Story because I watched it once and I can't even stand it.
Really? Nobody brought it up.
It's so
family.
It's just that's just
we
dumb.
Watched The Christmas Story. It's a Wonderful Life and Elf every year.
Nice.
Every year you
I
have
love
to
you
watch
say
those.
Elf like it's been around for like 40
ever.
Years.
It's
like every
forever,
year since like 5
every
years
year.
Ago. Okay.
It's the best one that's come out in years, though.
I'm with you, Lisa.
That one was good.
I think the most underappreciated Christmas movie is actually Jingle All the Way.
Oh,
I mean, it's so funny. Sinbad and Arnold Schwarzenegger. When more must
Sinbad
I say?
Sinbad is pretty great.
Yeah.
I do like him. So, yeah, that is pretty good. I'm trying to think. Yeah, just A Christmas Story. And I've never seen the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Because
what?
I couldn't stand the regular one.
Lisa, we're on
so
the
dumb.
Same page.
Yeah.
Lisa, it's one of the great American
classics.
It is.
That. Yeah, no.
I think it won like 10 Academy Awards.
Pretty sure that's false.
I'm sure.
Best screenplay, sure best
it,
actor. Yeah,
I'm sure it
film.
Did. Okay, so maybe let's briefly talk about Jesus. And
hey, why are you laughing when she says that? That's not funny.
Just turning a sharp corner.
It's true. We should probably mention Jesus.
This is how we specialize in soft segues here on the Melon Show. Let's talk about Jesus. Meaningful. What is necessary to make Christmas meaningful for you? And do you find yourself, is that easy to infuse in your Christmas celebration? Or do you find yourself being all frantic and weird or sappy or materialistic or whatever? Let's be honest here. We can just confess one to another. And then you're like, oh my goodness, I guess I better go to a service or I better like read the Christmas story or whatever. I mean, what does that look like for you to have felt that was something you can reflect on?
Our family seems to be so easy. Like, it's not like for us, we look at it as an opportunity to teach our daughter to receive gifts instead of, you know, it's a great chance to, it's easy to teach her to give gifts because it's Christmas, but it's also an opportunity to teach her to receive because God has so much for us to receive. I think sometimes we forget to learn how to receive, and as a kid, it's a great opportunity to teach them, hey, this is how we receive gifts. So, and then we make like Jesus
like
birthday
I was
cards.
Always good at receiving gifts and
yeah.
not in the other way.
Right.
So,
but as we get adults, we get older lessons. And it's like starts to get awkward.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, I didn't get you
why
anything.
You
you're always like, you go through
time.
That list, like, who did I, you know, just be happy to receive it instead of being all awkward.
And
about
you have
it.
Those little emergency gifts for
I
the people
though.
You need to give. Yeah.
I've done that. You just like carry wrapped presents in the back of the car? Anyone?
No.
Cody totally does.
I'm not that organized.
Really generic wrapped presents in my trunk.
Okay. Here is the, that's where it's like the, oh my goodness, thank you so much. And I did get you this candle.
I thought of you.
The candles or the like weird mugs are the go-to. Yeah.
They're always good too. Yeah.
I think with if I'm with my family and most of my family is still back home in South Dakota, so typically I don't always get to be with them for the holiday. But if we're all together, we have this, it's like a hardcover Christmas story book that's got beautiful illustrations. We've had it for years, and my dad will walk us through that. And so that's kind of, we always do the Christmas Eve thing, read the story, open gifts. But yeah, in Christmas Eve service, I mean, I always cry at Christmas Eve service. I don't know. I think it's just that overwhelming, like just the magic in the air, like, you know, but just like people coming together to really be thoughtful and ponder what the season for us as believers is really about. And it just and then, you know, as you grow in your walk with the Lord too, you just become more and more aware of what the significance of this amazing being choosing to embody a human to come to earth so that he could journey for 30 plus years and then sacrifice himself on the cross. It really kind of becomes very overwhelming. So.
Yeah, this season is very worshipful for me, and it's actually like less the Christmas season and more the Advent season. And Advent is something in my family, in my community, and I celebrate very intentionally. You know, we do the four Sundays of Advent. Kay and I are actually leading our gathering through that in a very liturgical way. And so we have the different voices and you know, of each week, the voice of Isaiah, the voice of John the Baptist, the voice of Mary, the voice of Luke, typically, the gospel writer. And then on Christmas Eve, like the voice of basically the angels, just worshiping Jesus. Advent, I love that framework for Christmas so much more, because it's not only about the arrival of Jesus in the incarnation, but it's about his return as well. And so, like the theology of Advent, which means arriving, and the theology of incarnation are extremely relevant and present, and change everything about how we live. And so in that sense, like Christmas every day, like we should have Advent in our hearts every single day, and so on. So this season is extremely rich and beautiful for us. And so like having kids now, it's pretty fun to bring them into that. And they're still extremely innocent, and we haven't they haven't become too materialistic yet. It's incredible how like not focused on that they are. And so instead it's just about leading them through all this experiential worship. So for us, it's a real time of refocusing, of saying like Lord, come soon. And I love this season so much for that reason.
Yeah, I really like how Christmas is celebrated at the end of the calendar year, because it almost gives you an entree to ask people questions about reflecting on the year. Like, I love asking questions. I'm a question asker. And inevitably, when I go home, whether it's with my family or other people in the community there, I'm like this, I come across as this like freaky extrovert that's always trying to get into people's business. And people are like, can you just leave me alone? I just want to have my cider, you know, whatever. But it's almost like I have a little bit of a license to do it because of Christmas. And so I'll ask people questions. I'll ask them to reflect on their year, or what are you looking forward to in the new year, and kind of get conversations started, which I enjoy doing a lot. And so, you know, sometimes with better luck than others, I guess. But yeah, so I think it's always cool to be able to do that. And kind of, you know, there have been times when I've just straight up even been able to use Christmas as an opportunity to launch into the gospel, whether it's with a family member who doesn't know Jesus, or even someone in the store, you know, who'll say, oh, this season is so crazy, or I don't even know why we do Christmas. And so I can kind of have that conversation. And with that, I was actually going to read one of my favorite carols, or probably my favorite carol, if you don't get into all the other ones that are, hyper produced or whatever, is Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which I feel like should have, the reason I love it is it's almost a complete telling of the gospel story in its verses. And of course, the final verse is probably my favorite. And I will read it as we close out. Hail the heaven-born Prince of Peace. Hail the Son of Righteousness. Mm-hmm. Light and life to all he brings, risen with healing in his wings. Mm-hmm. Mild he lays his glory by, born that man no more may die, born to raise the sons of earth, born to give them second birth. Hark the herald angels sing, glory to the newborn king. And I just love that, the whole concept of, you know, he came, he died for a purpose. We now have hope as a result. We now have second birth. And so glory to the newborn, the fact that he's a newborn and he's a king already. So yeah. Pretty awesome.
That's
so
good.
Thanks, y'all, for reflecting on this. This is great.
Thanks.
And everyone else out there, Merry Christmas to you. Happy New Year as well. We will see you around next week, actually, for our Best Of show, which is going to be a lot of fun. Kudos to Laura and Athena for putting that thing together. So you're definitely going to want to look forward to that as well. So thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Get out the lights, put up the tree, same old stockings, same routine, busy sidewalks, crowded stores. Somehow I've forgotten what it's all for. The Word made flesh for me.
Well, for our culture segment, we have the opportunity to welcome back Dr. Joe Wheeler, known as America's Storyteller. He's been with us before, and he is known for amazing, vintage, nostalgic Christmas stories. And so this time around, just in honor of Christmas, he is going to read the story, The Belated Christmas Train, an old-fashioned story from the 1800s. So sit down, listen up, and enjoy Dr. Joe Wheeler.
The Belated Christmas Train by William McGinnis. All the forenoon of the day before Christmas, the train had been plowing across the desert, winding through canyons or climbing mountains on its way east across Arizona and New Mexico. It stopped for dinner when it should have stopped for breakfast, and it was a sullen-looking lot of passengers that left the cars for the dining room. Dinner didn't brighten them up much, and they returned to their cars complaining bitterly of the luck that made their train late this particular day, when all were anxious that it should be on time. The train pulled out, and the passengers settled themselves as best they could for a tedious afternoon ride. In the smoking room of the rear sleeper sat six traveling men, a shoe man, a shirt man, two grocery men, a hardware man, and a dry goods man. All were going home for Christmas. With the exception of the dry goods man, all were married. The two grocery men, the hardware man, and the dry goods man started a game of cards. The shirt man opened the daily paper bought at the dinner station. It was all Christmas, and it made him so homesick that he threw it on the seat and puffed vigorously at his cigar. He had been gone long and now must miss his Christmas dinner with his wife and babies. One of them he had never seen. The shoe man was looking out the window, but his eyes were not on the scenery. He was trying to look into a little home 500 miles away and see what they were doing for Christmas. The hardware man puffed away at his cigar for a few minutes and then threw it in the corner. "Don't taste good," he said. He was thinking of home. With the exception of the dry goods man, the players weren't thinking of the game, and for fully 5 minutes at a stretch, no one would speak. In the middle section of the sleeper sat a woman whose voice had thrilled thousands. She was on her way to spend Christmas with friends in one of the cities of Kansas. She must miss her Christmas dinner. The thought made her cross. She found fault with everything and everybody. Across the aisle from her sat a mother with her little blue-eyed, golden-haired 2-year-old beside her. They were on their way to spend Christmas with the old folks. Her husband, a traveling man, was to meet them there. Now they would be late. She felt like crying. The little girl was tired. She bothered Mama. Her mother shook her and set her in the corner of the section where she cried softly. The big compound engine was making the ground tremble with its roar as it dragged the train up the steep grade. The clouds of black smoke rolling back over the train would sometimes shut out the view. Then the train came to a sudden stop. "What's the matter?" was asked of a brakeman who came through the car. "Oh, freight got a couple of cars off the track, trying to take the switch ahead of us." "How long will it take to put them on?" "About 2 hours." This was the last straw. No hope for any eastern connections now. "Let's take a walk," said the shoeman to the shirtman, and together they started off toward a little clump of cottonwoods, about 100 yards distant, the only trees to be seen for miles. Just within the edge of the little grove, they came across a man, standing beside a narrow, grave-like hole he had evidently just dug. "Prospecting?" asked the shoeman. He shook his head. Then they saw that his face bore a sad expression. His eyes looked as though he had been weeping. "Grave?" asked the shoeman. He nodded his head. "For whom?" The tone was one of sympathy. "My little girl," said the man. After a few moments, he went on. "We lived in western Kansas. Our little girl was always sickly. Doctor said, try the mountains. So we sold out and started in our wagon, but it was too late." His voice broke. "She died last night. It's a long ways to the next town, and we don't know a soul in the territory. So we concluded we'd bury her here ourselves." And then looking wistfully at the two men, he asked, "Be either of you men a preacher? Wife can't stand it to bury the little one without someone to make a prayer and sing a song." Both men felt something rise in their throats. It was the shoeman who spoke. "We're not preachers, but," he hesitated, "we'll see that your baby is buried as a Christian." "She is over yonder," said the man, pointing to a covered wagon near the other side of the little grove. "We'll be back in a few minutes," said the shoeman, and taking the shirt man by the arm, he started toward the train. About halfway there, he stopped and said, "I've got a testament in my suitcase. My little girl put it there before I started on this trip. You read a chapter and say a word or two. I'll try to make a prayer. And I'll ask that singer to sing a song. We'll get the other four boys for bearers." "We can get the boys," answered the other, "but that singer won't move out of her seat." "You get the boys. I'll ask her anyway." Then he entered the car, walked boldly to her seat, and said, "Pardon me for speaking to you. I'm asking a favor for a mother." In a few words, he told the story. And then he asked, "Will you sing something for that mother?" "Yes," she answered, and at once followed him. The mother across the aisle heard the story. Out of curiosity, perhaps more than anything else, she followed, carrying the baby in her arms. The six men, the singer, the mother and her baby, followed by perhaps a dozen of the other passengers, soon reached the wagon and that little clump of trees. A long shoebox that had held household goods had been emptied of its contents. A fancy quilt had been folded and placed in the box, covering the bottom and sides. And on this, her little head resting on a small pillow, was his little girl, a sweet-faced child of perhaps 5 years. Folded in her arms was a battered doll. By the side of the rough box knelt the mother. She had gathered an apron full of the bright-colored dead leaves. These she was arranging around the inside of the box, and she was talking to that still form as though it yet could hear and understand. Her husband touched her arm. "Mary, here are some folks to help us." She rose to her feet. "I knew God would send someone," she answered simply. The shirt man stepped to the foot and the shoe man to the head of that rough little coffin. The shirt man remembered a chapter he had often heard read and had found it in the little testament. "Let not your heart be troubled. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you," he read. Then the shoeman prayed that though the grave was far from any human dwelling, the angels would mark the spot till Jesus returned. The two grocery men, the hardware man, and the dry goods man carried the rough little coffin to the grave and lowered it with a couple of picket ropes, while the shoeman said, "Earth to earth, ashes to ashes, and dust to dust." At this point, the singer, clasping her hands and raising her eyes toward heaven, sang with all the sweetness and tenderness of her marvelous voice, of heaven's love and care. Then, stepping to the mother's side, she said, "Come," and gently led her back to the wagon. In a few minutes, the men filled the grave and made a mound of stones over it. Then they walked back to the wagon with the father. But the singer and the mother sat together on a box, their arms around each other, and there were tears on both faces. A whistle sounded. The singer kissed the mother. The husband pressed the hand of each of the six men and said simply, "Gentlemen, you are all strangers, but you have been kind to us in our trouble, and we thank you." Glancing back after he had gone a few yards, the shoeman saw the wife with her arms around her husband's neck and heard her say, "Wasn't God good to send someone to pray and sing for baby?" The train sped on, but the game of cards was not finished. The little golden-haired tot did not bother Mama anymore, but was held close and heard stories until the short winter afternoon drew to a close. A baby song, and the little one was fast asleep, laid upon the seat and covered with a wrap. The singer spoke pleasantly to the white-haired old lady in the seat in front of her. A mother with three little ones occupied a section near the front of the car. As it grew dark, the little ones became fretful and restless. The singer walked to the front of the car, took the youngest in her arms, and sang a baby song, and the tired little head dropped on her shoulder, fast asleep. Still holding the little one in her arms, she told the others wonderful Christmas stories, until interrupted by the brakeman calling, 30 minutes for supper. Passengers for the south will change cars."
Emmanuel, the promise kept.
Well, folks, as we finish out the show, we are opening up our inbox, and I'm very privileged to be able to introduce you again, actually reintroduce you, to our friend Carl Benzio. He's part of our Physicians Resource Council that advises Focus on the Family related to medical and cultural issues as they relate to medicine, social justice issues, all related to that. So he is a psychiatrist by trade when he's not just hanging out and doing other fun things. Welcome, Carl.
Hey, great to be here with you, Lisa.
And thus, we have to pull on your expertise for this question. And I'm going to read it here. This is interesting. This listener says, I've often wondered about people with depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, hallucinations, etc. How much is mental illness and how much is spiritual attack? How can you know the difference and how can you effectively use medicine, prayer, and spiritual warfare together to move toward healing and wholeness with cases like these?
Well, Lisa, as a Christian psychiatrist, this is a question I get many times. And it's great that this person is really trying to think of it in that kind of context. You know, just as we see in the Trinity, you know, God the Father, the brains of the operation, Jesus the body, and the Holy Spirit, the spirit, we're made in that likeness. So when we have a psychological issue, all three of those spheres are implicated and struggling. And so it's important for us to understand a couple key concepts. One is decision-making is the exercise for the brain. So when we're in a stressful situation, the decisions we make could increase our blood pressure, could give us heartburn, muscle tension, headaches, maybe an asthma attack. The decisions we make actually affect our chemistry and affect our brain the most. It's the most sensitive organ. So decisions, when we make good ones, give us a chemical balance, or as the Bible says, renew the mind, give us good brain circuitry. And we make wrong decisions, we injure our brain, chemical imbalance, we call it baggage or footholds or strongholds for the enemy. And so the decisions we make or that mind sphere affects our chemistry, but it's the spiritual truths, principles, beliefs that then drive our decisions. So really most important is that what is the instruction manual that we're using? Are we using our Creator's instruction manual, the Bible, or are we using our own, the one that Carl manufactured, or each one as we do ourselves? And so to try to put this in a context of an example we can understand, adult onset diabetes or heart disease will often start from a person using food as a security blanket, as a soother, as an escape. So, you know, instead of looking at God or the biblical principles to soothe and bring peace, we look at what he created or the world's answers. And as we continue to make those decisions psychologically, we then end up with biological damage to our heart, blood pressure, pancreas. So the treatment, even though it started as a spiritual issue, the treatment is, well, we give insulin or we give a blood pressure medication, but then we tell the person, hey, you need to work on skills, psychological skills and spiritual skills, because that's the long-term cure for your situation. So when we run into psychiatric or mental health issues or even addiction issues as well, it's that same kind of paradigm. It's usually spiritual problems is that first domino that leads to psychological struggles, then lead to biological struggles in our brain chemistry. So in order to treat, psychiatric meds, I prescribe them a lot. They're very helpful for people, but I've never seen them cure anybody. But they help with symptoms a lot. And a lot of times we need to help with the symptoms first. Then we can start to work on what are those psychological, spiritual cures that are going to renew our mind in a long-term fashion to really give us the relief and peace that we want. You know, in closing, 2 Corinthians 10:3 says, you know, take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. That's our divine, spiritually divine, powerful weapon of making good decisions and being obedient. So that's why I'm passionate about decision making, and it's the key. And it's, what are we going to use to make those decisions? Are we going to use our Creator's instruction manual, the Bible, or the one that we manufacture? The more we use our own, the more psychological struggles we have. The more we use God's, the more we'll have that healing and that cure and that peace that he provides.
Interesting. Fascinating to see how both of those can work in tandem, but really getting to the root issue is what's so important. So thank you so much for weighing in on that.
Sure.
Okay, everyone, that is it for this week's show. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. Otherwise, you can go and search on our site for past questions, see if you might have a question that has already been answered. Tell your friends as well. We want to be here as a resource for you. We will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.